Celebrating 40 years of music and ideas, 91.3 KBCS, a listener-supported public service of Bellevue College. You're about to listen to a segment of our program, Music and Ideas, hosted by Sonia Green.
The giving season is upon us, and I don't know about you, but my mailbox is filling with shopping catalogs and advertisements. At this time of selling, buying, and gifting, it seems appropriate to take a step back and look at consumerism. The nonprofit organization Humanities Washington hosts Think and Drinks throughout the state, and these are public events that offer a topic and a panel of speakers on the topic, inspire thoughtful discussion in our communities. They host two events over the next week on consumerism as a topic, and with me in the studio is Humanities Washington Program Manager Zeki Abdulhamid. Welcome, Zeki.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And appreciate you being here. And also with us on the phone is University of Washington Department of History Professor Linda Nash. Hi, Linda. Thanks for joining us on the phone.
Hi, Sonia. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for being here. So, Zeki, I'm going to first of all start off with you. So the Think and Drink events, they kind of inspire discussion. That's kind of the thought behind them. So what spurred Humanities Washington to kind of start these kind of events in general?
Well, I guess, first of all, I have to give a shout out to the council in Oregon, the Humanities Council in Oregon, Oregon Humanities. They're the ones who came up with the idea initially. And we have a very good relationship with them, so we wanted to try the idea out here in Washington. The premise behind it is you get one or two speakers, you get a moderator, and you have a program. However, you could have it in places like a town hall or a city hall setting, or you can go where people already gather, like bars and tasting rooms across the state. We found out that by doing that, the conversation is much more relaxed, and it's really conducive to an open and honest conversation, and it's exactly what we want to accomplish in Humanities Washington, which is to spark conversation and critical thinking using story as a catalyst. This program is the perfect vehicle for us to achieve that.
And Zeki, it also seems like those venues that you just mentioned also are inclusive of all age types. Is that kind of the other thought process a little bit?
Absolutely. Our median age for a lot of our programs is usually around middle aged, and we wanted to kind of get that down a little bit. So when we do that and you go, let's say if you go to one of these events, what you're going to find is people in their 20s sitting right next to people in their 60s. It's a really good, diverse group of people coming together for a conversation.
Okay. Well, what made you guys think about talking about consumerism? Was that based on the holiday season, or was that something that came up through conversation? How did consumerism as a topic come up?
Yeah, this is something I've been wanting to do for a little over a year. Last year, we wanted to give it a shot. And what ended up happening is one of our speakers that was going to talk about consumerism got stuck at the UN to give a presentation. So she called us at the last day and said, I can't make it because I'm at the UN. People want me to stay and give more presentations. So what we ended up happening for that event is talking about the Happiness Initiative for the event, which was great, but it's not what I intended to do. I really wanted to give this a second shot. I usually avoid having events around December because if it's not holiday related, nobody wants to touch it. So we thought, well, if we do it in this time, time slot, I think it would be fantastic, because every year around the holidays, especially around Black Friday, the conversation gets more and more active about all these sorts of topics. So we thought if we do it right around this time, we could get people to really engage.
Okay. Well, I'm going to come back to you because I do want to know a little bit more about Think and Drink. But since we're on the talking about the consumerism piece, I want to bring University of Washington Department of History Professor Linda Nash into the discussion, because Linda, I know you have some kind of history facts, if you will, about consumerism. So why don't you talk a little bit about that and what it means? And when people think of it, you know, I think of it and I immediately think just spending money, but I'm sure it's bigger than that.
Well, yeah, it really is bigger than that in American culture. I mean, really, a lot of scholars have argued over the last 10 or 15 years that consumerism is not so much about spending, it is about spending, it is about commodities, but it's really become a fundamental way in which we identify ourselves to one another, which we identify with social groups that we want to be identified with, and it's also a way that we even identify now as American citizens. It's sort of considered, consumption is considered in many ways a fundamental part of American citizenship. So really, to talk about consumerism, we really have to step back and think about it in all its different facets, both positive and negative. It's really not enough to say, oh, well, consumerism is bad, it's about spending money. Really, I'd say for you know, the last 100 years at least, consumerism has really permeated many other aspects of our social and cultural life.
Zeki, I see you shaking your head a lot as she was talking about the pros and cons. Is that part of what she said in terms of the history of it? Is that part of what excited you about this as a topic?
Absolutely. What I don't want to happen is for us to go for an hour and a half and just complain about what our current system is. I always want to bring in a historical perspective about the topic that we're talking about. So I'm very excited to talk about the history of consumerism, how we got here, and that way it puts everything in perspective.
Okay. Well, speaking of how we got here, Linda, how did we get here? And what are some of those pros and cons that you mentioned?
Well, you know, it's always difficult for historians to give the quick answer to how we got here because we always like to look at the multiple causes. We see many, many factors that come together. And really, in American history, it's a perfect storm of factors that come together to promote a consumer society. And it's worth mentioning at the outset that Americans didn't invent consumer society by any means. Depending on which scholar you read, consumer society may have started, you know, in 18th century Britain or even in 15th century Florence or perhaps, you know, the Netherlands or even China, right? There are many examples of consumer society. But what Americans did pioneer was mass consumer society. And that is what's fundamentally different about consumer society in America, is that it reached the masses in an unprecedented way. And there were several elements that were part of that. One was the massive increase in the productive capacity of the American economy at the end of the 19th and beginning of the 20th century. So many more kinds of products being produced. A lot of that the result of the advantages that producers were able to take advantage of the advantages of new kinds of fuels, fossil fuels in particular, that allowed them to expand production beyond anyone's wildest dreams. And as a result of that, when you have mass production, from the producer's perspective, you also need mass consumption, right? There's no sense producing anything if you can't sell it. And so producers started to then think about new techniques of selling, creating desires, advertising, displays, department stores, all sorts of new techniques of selling came into being in the late 19th and early 20th century as well.
But, and can you give me an example of one of those techniques? I just want to be able to envision like what we are, where we are now and what that technique might have looked like then.
Well, at the end of the 19th century, you get really the first ads, for instance, right? You know, the first ads are for patent medicines, but very quickly manufacturers of food products and others start to advertise in newspapers. And then you get brands, the first, you know, national brands as markets start to expand across the continent and to sort of, you know, so consumers are further away from producers and they need some way to sort of trust the quality of the product they're buying. So you get brands and then you get jingles and then you get icons associated with brands. Then you get the modern department store in the early 20th century with sort of fancy displays and all kinds of other amenities that make shopping a pleasurable experience. So those are some of the techniques that come into existence pretty early on to encourage people to buy more. But it really isn't just what producers are doing. It's also increasingly the emphasis of some employers, Henry Ford is key here, and eventually government itself on really creating and retaining a high-wage consumer-oriented economy. That is, there's a series of government policies that are adopted over the course of the 1930s and 1940s and on down that really focus on increasing wages, keeping wages high, I should say, and keeping consumer spending high. And the way that is done is through also promoting a continually growing economy. And so there's a set of economic policies that are put into place. I mean, consumerism, it's never just an individual choice, right? You're part of a culture where other people are doing it. You're also responding, all of us are responding, to a set of government policies that have encouraged more spending on the part of consumers. In fact, our whole economic system is based on mass consumer spending. Hence, in the wake of the Great Recession, you know, what's the answer? Well, it's more consumer spending. That's how we've come to get ourselves out of economic depressions and recessions, and we can't seem to think of another potential way out because that's what we've done across the 20th century.
Okay, we're talking about consumerism today, and we're talking with University of Washington Department of History Professor Linda Nash, and also in the studio with me, Humanities Washington Program Manager Zeki Abdelhamid. And Zeki, I know you were shaking your head and you want to add something. Before you add that, I just wanted to chime in on a little bit of what Linda said, because you mentioned the wage thing, and it what immediately popped in my mind was, wow, well, consumerism is kind of almost an argument for that $15 wage that workers in SeaTac were arguing for, and I'm sure that's going to come up in Washington. I'm Seattle. And Zeki, I know you wanted to add something as well, but I just, that was the first thing that popped in my head when you said it.
Yeah, actually, we probably will be addressing the $15 minimum wage debate. And there are other speaker, Mina Rishi from Seattle U, is going to be with us at these events. And that's one of the points that she had brought up. But what I wanted to go back to is I immediately think of when we're talking about consumer society and spending and increasing spending. I remember when 9/11 happened, one of the solutions that the president had for us was go shopping, and that at that point to make everything seem normal again. And so that association with what normal is shopping and spending money, I think, is just very interesting and very telling about our consumer society.
I would agree. Linda, let me come back to you and ask you this. So how does Washington State fare in comparison to the rest of the country in terms of consuming?
Oh, boy, I don't think I have a statistic off the top of my head that I can give you.
I thought you were going to say, oh, boy, I don't have enough time.
I don't think that we're significantly different. That would be my educated opinion without the facts before me.
About this, though? Throw out Washington State, then are there any statistics or anything you can compare as it relates to country to country? How is the U.S. compared to China or compared to London, the United Kingdom?
Yeah, well, okay, most of us now realize that, you know, Americans consume by far more than any other people on a per capita basis, right?
Mm-hmm.
But that's not across the board, right? We have tremendous inequality in this country. But nonetheless, on a per capita basis, if you're looking at resources or goods and services, Americans consume far, far more than anyone else in the world. And, you know, that's one of the issues that I think really is forcing many people to sort of reconsider the policies that have come to seem quote-unquote normal, as Zeki says, over the course of the 20th century. Because we now realize that what is normal from the perspective of the U.S. was really a historical aberration, right? I mean, this emphasis on growth and a constantly expanding economy and in which you paid really no attention to the environmental impacts of economic growth and the increases in productive capacity, maybe that made sense when there weren't that many people in North America on the whole and resources were abundant and pollution didn't really seem to be a problem. But that's no longer the case, right? And we can no longer ignore the sort of global impacts of Americans' consumption, nor should we ignore it, nor can we ignore the inequalities both within our own country and between countries in terms of the amount of consumption. So those are really, to me, the two big issues that are forcing many people now to sort of re-examine what we have taken to be normal and I hope to start to see it as a historical aberration that we need to kind of rethink.
Zeki, did you want to add something to that?
Oh, I just think that the point that Linda made about the environment is key. I saw this statistic, and I have no idea if it's anywhere near accurate or not or where it came from, so I'm a little skeptical of it. But it just said that about, I believe, 90% of the gifts that you will receive under your tree this holiday season will end up in a landfill within 6 months.
Mm.
Again, I don't know if that's accurate or not, but it does...
But it makes you think.
But it makes you think, absolutely, yeah.
Mm. And Linda, kind of, you know, taking what he's talking about as well as what you're kind of talking about in terms of at the rate that we're consuming. And so if we're at a place where it's unsustainable to consume at the rate and we're considering our increased population and the impacts to our environment, what do you see as some of the solutions to our addiction to consuming?
Well, I don't think that there is, you know, a set of easy solutions. And I'm very wary of some of the more moralizing anti-consumerist arguments, because I don't think it's a matter of individual choice. I mean, yes, individual choices are important, but they're really not they're not the answer. And a lot of the sort of critiques of consumption, really since the late 19th century, have taken a very moralizing tone that very easily can have conservative implications. It very quickly can play into the hands of the sort of anti-austerity, the austerity kind of you know, conservative arguments right now, right? America's problems is that we've overspent, right? And government needs to be smaller and people need to be more responsible. And I think, you know, for those of us who see ourselves on the left side of the political spectrum, we need to really be aware of that argument and how sort of moralizing arguments about individual consumption aren't that helpful. On the other hand, I think there are policy options that we should be advocating for, things like internalizing the environmental costs of production, right? It's not, you know, making companies take account of the environmental goods that they use up and or pollute when they produce things, because that will very quickly change behavior. And I think we also need to prioritize both environmental issues and social justice and human rights issues globally, rather than assuming, as we have for 100 years, that growth will take care of it, right? That's always the argument. Well, if we'll get the economic growth, and then we can, and that will take care of the human rights issues, and that will take care of the environmental issues, because there's this longstanding argument in, you know, economics that says, well, if you need the economic growth first, and then countries turn around and start implementing environmental controls. And there's lots of problems with that argument, and I think it's pretty clear that we can't expect that that will be the case at this point. And the other thing I think we could think about is socially prioritizing public over private consumption. I mean, what we've seen in this country is the relentless privatization of consumption, where everything is like a personal purchase, right? Whereas we've had relatively little investment in public sector goods, much less than Western Europe, right? And things like, dare I say it, national health insurance, or, you know, just public parks, mass transit. There's lots of ways that you can continue to invest and sort of, you know, have jobs and a quality of life that don't involve sort of intensely privatized consumption. Arguably, public consumption can be much more efficient overall.
Thank you so much, Linda. I'm going to ask you, Zeki, if you have anything to add to that in terms of solutions.
I'm not sure if I do. It's an argument that just keeps on going year after year, and I'm not sure if there are a set of solutions that we can enact in the United States realistically. I agree with Linda about public consumption and investment in things like public transit and healthcare and to get away from the buyer society or the ownership society that I think we're obsessed with. I used to live in the Middle East, and ownership society wasn't something that we engaged in that much. So that was definitely something new to me when I emigrated to the United States, about having to own everything yourself, own your own car, your house, and not rely on something that is shared, like renting houses or renting apartments. And then again, it's different. I mean, you go to New York, and of course, it's going to be much different than over here. Not a whole lot of people are buying over there, I don't think.
No. Yeah. Well, I think this is definitely going to be an interesting discussion, and I think it's a very timely discussion, obviously, to be having this time of year. Thank you both very much for engaging, and we will have information about the Humanities Washington Think and Drink events on our website at kbcs.fm. Again, our guest in studio, Humanities Washington Program Manager Zeki Abdulhamid. Thank you for being here.
Thank you very much for having me.
And on the phone, University of Washington Department of History Professor Linda Nash. Thank you, Linda.
Thank you.
This is Music and Ideas here on KBCS 91.3.